And good afternoon. You're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM. And I know people are curious about a number of issues, especially the coalition government. We'll be discussing that later in our program today. And we're also going to be discussing our co-host Peter's trip to the Philippines. He just returned from a multi-week tour of labor conditions in the Philippines, and he'll be discussing that with us. But first today, we're very pleased to have with us Tifon Dixon. Now, Tifon has been on our program before. She was the first to file a motion to investigate the shooting down of the airliner carrying two Hutu presidents that sparked the events in 1994, the first to call for the disclosure of results, a very significant case, very significant trial, and we're very pleased to have her with us today. So, Tifon, thank you very much for coming on our program today.
Hello.
Hi. We have you loud and clear. That's a very good sign. Certainly, you've been involved in this case very heavily, and you've recently written an article for Global Research online, and this particular publication was about Rose Kabuyi, the new investigation on Rose Kabuyi. We had heard a little bit about that in the media here in Canada and in the West, but we haven't received all the details, so we're very fortunate to have you investigating and bringing these facts to us. Could you clarify for our listeners who exactly is Rose Kabuyi?
Rose Kabuyi is one of the 10 people against whom arrest warrants have been issued by a French anti-terrorism judge, Jean-Louis Bruguière, rather well known for his work, in particular in the Lockerbie case in France. And these charges are for the conspiracy to commit a terrorist act in connection to the shooting down of the plane carrying President Habyarimana of Rwanda and Cyprien Teriamira of Burundi on April 6, 1994, this spark of the massacres that followed that are well known. And Rose Kabuyi was an RPF major. She's now retired at the rank of colonel, and she is alleged by Judge Bruguière to have basically aided and abetted this conspiracy, having had specifically, according to Judge Bruguière, the actual shooters, so members of what was known as the network commando of the RPF, in her offices and in the RPF headquarters in Kigali, that had been, by agreement, stationed in the legislature of Rwanda, up in a hill in Kigali, in a placement that even Roméo Dallaire testified in Rwanda was odd, since it was so very strategic. And Rose Kabuyi did go on to exercise other fairly powerful roles in Rwanda by appointment by the RPF, by Paul Kagame. She was prefet of Kigali. This is something like a cross between a mayorship and a governorship. And she was also, by appointment, a member of the Transitional Assembly of Rwanda. She was born outside of Rwanda, in Uganda, much as many of the RPF leaders were, attended the same elementary schools, and as many of her colleagues in the Rwandan Patriotic Army and Rwandan Patriotic Front, she was a soldier in the Ugandan Army. She was even an officer, and was an aide-de-camp for the chief of staff of the Ugandan army. This is much like Paul Kagame, who was the chief of military intelligence of the Ugandan army. And when the RPF invaded Rwanda on October 1st, 1990, the story then, as very much as now, goes that we have somewhat of a civil war, or we have a rebel force invading Rwanda or beginning armed hostilities. But the fact of the matter is we have officers and soldiers of a foreign army invading from a foreign country with the military materiel of that country, Uganda. And despite the objections of Yoweri Museveni to the effect that the members of the RPF were in fact deserters, it's significant to note that despite the fact that, of course, these RPF leaders returned to Uganda on several occasions, and even in diplomatic in diplomatic contexts, not a single member of the RPF who had been a member previously of the Ugandan army was ever court-martialed, nor, to my knowledge, was there ever a formal loss of rank from by any of these people on the part of Museveni. So it's important to note, because this was the position of Rwanda and even former Zaire at that time in 1990, that Rwanda had been the object of a foreign aggression. And unfortunately, despite the fact that this was even raised at the UN, it never seemed to have caught on to the narrative that developed following that invasion, and which led to the war and then to the shooting down of President Habyarimana's plane, the massacres that followed, and of course the invasions, plural, in Congo up to and including today.
Well, it certainly sounds like Rose Kabuye shares certain similarities with President of Rwanda currently, and it also, I mean, she has military connections, mayoral political connections, like you've said. She has that shared history in Uganda invading as part of the RPF, her associations with the other hardliners. But in the situation where she's now being accused of involvement in the shooting down of the airliner, who was it that initially accused her? Who is accusing her now of being part of that?
She is charged with nine other people, including Paul Kagame, by Jean-Louis Bruguière. He's a French, what's known in France as juge d'instruction. That would be an investigating magistrate. He is specialized in anti-terrorism investigations, and as I mentioned previously, was involved in investigating with respect to the Lockerbie trial. He's a very experienced, seasoned judge. I believe it was a six-year-long criminal investigation, and this is a French matter. Rose Kabuye was arrested in Germany and extradited by Germany to France, and the circumstances of the extradition are perhaps a bit curious, since Rose Kabuye today is chief of protocol for Paul Kagame. However, this visit was not undertaken in a diplomatic capacity, and as such, it has been stated by German officials, by French officials, and even by, I believe, the current Rwandan Minister of Justice, that in fact Rwanda and Rose Kabuye specifically was warned that this arrest warrant would be executed were she to come to Germany. And there's some speculation that this is a calculated move on the part of Ms. Kabuye and on the part of the Rwandan government, and Kagame perhaps more specifically, to have the case, so to speak, tested, since it's also said that the charges against Kabuye are perhaps out of the 10, those that are the least severe, since it would appear to be more of an aiding and abetting charge. Mr. Kagame, of course, has not to this day obtained the investigative file against him, which I understand is comprised of some 5,000 pages, so this is an opportunity to get that information. It also seems that there's an interesting diplomatic backdrop here, having to do with the desire of France's new government, and in particular the French Minister of Foreign Affairs, Bernard Kouchner, to improve relations with the man he calls his friend, Paul Kagame of Rwanda.
Has the French government taken a consistent position towards this investigation, or what would you say their approach has been?
Well, it's been a complicated relationship. There was a French commission of inquiry with respect to the events in Rwanda, and I think to a certain extent France has been on the defensive, since charges from Kagame attempting to implicate the French, but never with the type of evidence that could be said to be any more than anecdotal or declarative. So France has had to contend with these pretty chronic charges on the part of Kagame, having armed, having participated in genocide, and so forth, and even taking really unwarranted sort of heat from Rwanda for the Operation Turquoise, which saved, I mean, tens of thousands of people near the end of the massacres. It's been, I think, politically delicate for France. However, the French judicial system being as it is, Judge Bruguière accepted to investigate the shooting down of the plane when two complainants, widows of the French pilots of the plane, came forward as French citizens and requested that this investigation be carried out, and it is their right as French citizens. And Judge Bruguière then attempted and succeeded ultimately in carrying out an investigation that no other institution or jurisdiction appeared prepared to carry out. And from day one, it was requested that this be looked into. It's kind of spectacular, isn't it, that a plane carrying two presidents of member states of the United Nations is shot down with two SAM-16 missiles without there being any sort of serious investigation. And
as they said at the tribunal, or at least some people said, we don't investigate plane crashes.
Yes, this was the representative of the prosecutor of the ICTR, who said this in court on his oath of office when I presented a motion to obtain the disclosure of the results of any investigation that had been carried out into the shooting down of the president's plane, or alternatively, that investigations be carried out if they had not been carried out. And yes, that was the response. I mean, kind of shocking, really, in the cavalier nature of we don't investigate plane crashes, presidents, vice presidents, whatever. It's a way of trivializing, shockingly, I mean, this act of terrorism, in particular, knowing as we know, and as of course, any person exercising in a legal capacity at the prosecutor of the ICTR would know is connected to the subsequent events. So it was really shocking for me at the time, but not as shocking as to learn a few years later that at that very time that the motion was being presented, the investigations carried out by the prosecutor effectively had borne fruit, and that in fact the head of what was known at the prosecutor's office as the national team, an Australian lawyer by the name of Michael Horrigan, was contacting prosecutor Louise Arbour to tell her that he had plausible evidence by eyewitnesses, members of this network commando involved in shooting down the President Habyarimana's plane, and that these network commando members had been, or still were, part of the RPF. And we only learned in 2000 that Mr. Horrigan had alerted the United Nations to the fact that he had been carrying out these investigations, and that they had been shut down by Prosecutor Arbour in person, that she told him to put a stop to these investigations, as in her opinion the tribunal had no mandate to investigate the shooting down of the presidential plane. And my understanding, since Mr. Horrigan has filed an affidavit to this effect, is that he responded to Judge Arbour that in fact there was jurisdiction in time, since the tribunal mandate stretches from January 1st, 2004 to December 31st, 2004, and that there was also a clear jurisdiction in that violations of the Geneva Conventions covered by the tribunal also include acts of terrorism. But he was also, he says, shot since he had been given by Judge Arbour's predecessor, Judge Goldstone of South Africa, the specific mandate of investigating the shooting down of the plane. And furthermore, that when accompanied by his colleague, Jim Lyons, formerly of the FBI, to the U.S. Embassy in Kigali, where they contacted Judge Arbour from a secure phone, she had expressed, according to Mr. Horrigan, enthusiasm that his investigations had borne fruit, and she was made clearly aware of the nature of those results. More specifically, that he had witnesses who were members of this network commando, and according to Mr. Horrigan's affidavit again, Judge Arbour even indicated that this evidence was corroborating evidence that she had received a week previously. So the mystery remains as to why, when one of her lead investigators flew to The Hague at her request to brief her further on these investigations, the matter was summarily shut down. And that was done in 1997, in March of 1997, I believe.
Well, it sounds like good work is being punished. I mean, you've suggested there's a campaign to undermine the investigation. There was another man who was testifying, I think it was Mr. Ruzibiza, not sure if I can say his name.
Yeah.
I mean, he then recanted his testimony. It's somewhat of a farce. What's happening there?
Well, this is actually amazing because Ruzibiza has been a fairly important witness in all this, and has written a book setting out his disgust with the tactics of the RPF with which he served. He offers a personal testimony to the shooting down of the plane, and also sets out a narrative that is bone-chilling in its cynicism, essentially to the effect that Paul Kagame, after having signed peace accords with the Rwandan government in 2003, and after the arrival of UN peacekeeping troops in Rwanda, realized that there would be no possibility of exercising power politically, and that a military option had to be put back on the table. We then come to the conclusion that the shooting down of the plane, which would predictably, of course, bring about a resumption of armed hostilities, it was a pretty fragile, volatile moment in any event, despite the signing of the Arusha Accords.
Well,
and that these armed hostilities would permit him to accede to power, which, of course, he has and has on piles and piles of bodies, which appear to insulate, because of the nature and the gravity and the horror of the events, insulate him from any type of scrutiny, and also offer an interesting justification for either direct or indirect activities in neighboring Congo. This was Ruzibiza's claim, and Ruzibiza testified at the ICTR. He was cross-examined by the prosecutor. There was no recantation or even weakening on his part of his testimony, and now he claims that he only spoke to Judge Bruguière as a result of a French political machination, and it's odd because we can't seem to understand how it would be that Judge Bruguière, that the French government, could have any influence on Ruzibiza's testimony at a UN institution, and he testified publicly.
Well, I think it's truly tragic then that your efforts and the efforts of Michael Horrigan and others to unearth this past is being suppressed in some ways, because the results of what happened in Rwanda and the current government authoritarian rule, it continues to affect the rest of the continent with the invasion of Congo by Rwanda and so forth. This is a matter that has to be addressed. So I wish you success in getting to these details, publicizing these details, and starting to bring out the details of these all-important events that sparked off the events in Rwanda.
Well, thank you. And I guess just on a closing note, there are many other witnesses, and there is other evidence in France with Judge Bruguière's investigation, and it has to be hoped that these things will come to light, and that witnesses will be brave enough to let finally justice take its course in this matter.
Very good. Well, of course, I will let our listeners know where they can find your article and more articles by you. And again, I'd like to thank you, especially for bringing your expertise to our program and to our listeners today.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Tiphaine Dixon, Tiphaine lead counsel at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. She was the first to request that the tribunal should disclose the results or conduct an investigation into the shooting down of the airliner carrying two Hutu presidents that sparked the events in Rwanda in 1994. So we're very glad to have her with us. And if you want to read more, you can read her article, which is entitled Rwanda's Deadliest Secret, Who Shot Down President Habyarimana's Plane, and it's subtitled The Most Under-Investigated of Political Assassinations. So if you go to Global Research, it's still on the front page. It's by Tiphaine Dixon. It's spelled T-I-P-H-A-I-N-E, kind of like Tiphaine. It's Tiphaine, T-I-P-H-A-I-N-E, Dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N. If you look up Tiphaine Dixon on Global Research, you'll be able to find this article and other articles by Tiphaine. And we're pleased to have her on our program, and we should be following up on this issue, as well as other issues that Tiphaine has covered in the future. We're going to take a short musical break, and after that, we do have our co-host Peter Leibovich with us, who has just returned from the Philippines, investigating labor conditions and the way trade unionists are treated by the government as well. We're going to be discussing the coalition government possibility. I know this is a big issue, and I know Peter has things to say about that. So stay tuned. We'll be with you in a few minutes.